Empower Radio presents Out of the Fog. Join intuitive guide and spiritual teacher Karen Hager for lively, positive conversation with lightworkers, healers, and dynamic wisdom keepers. Get ready for inspiration and connection. This is Out of the Fog on Empower Radio. Here's your host, Karen Hager.
Hello and welcome to Out of the Fog. I'm Karen Hager. Each week at this time, we gather for spiritual conversation and enlightening guests. I want to spark your spirit and ignite your soul. I want to get you moving from stuck to unstuck, out of fear and into love. Now, I am glad you're here because time and distance are no barrier to energy. I believe that whenever you're listening, no matter how you found us, you're here for a reason. And I hope something you hear in the next hour gives you some new ideas and helps you move forward. Can we really know God? My guest on today's show is Rabbi Wayne Dossick, and he believes that there's a disconnect, a dissonance between the God we remember from before we came to earth and the one we meet in the Bible. His book, The Real Name of God, aims to answer that question, who is God? And it explores a more expansive understanding that he hopes will invite people to a more personal, loving relationship with the divine. I'll introduce you to Rabbi Dossick in just a minute, but first, please head over to fogcitypsychic.com and click on everything. That is a great place to find out about upcoming classes and events, and you can get the skinny on the guest lineup and topics for this show. And if you are looking for compassionate, no-nonsense intuitive guidance, fogcitypsychic.com is the place to learn how you can connect with me for a session via phone or Skype. All that and lots more. Gosh, there's classes happening. There's the online gallery reading is coming up. All of that stuff is at fogcitypsychic.com. And now, Rabbi Wayne Dossick is an educator, writer, spiritual guide, and healer who teaches and counsels about faith, ethical values, life transformations, and evolving human consciousness. Rabbi Dossick is the award-winning author of 8 previous critically acclaimed books, the now classic Living Judaism, Golden Rules, Soul Judaism, When Life Hurts, The Business Bible, The Best Is Yet to Be, and with his wife, Ellen Kaufman Dossick, 20 Minute Kabbalah and Empowering Your Indigo Child. Now his new book is The Real Name of God, Embracing the Full Essence of the Divine. For more than 17 years, Rabbi Dossick was a visiting adjunct professor at the University of San Diego, teaching the only courses in Jewish studies at this Catholic university. Currently, he's the spiritual guide of the Elijah Minyan in San Diego and the host of the internet radio show Spirit Talk Live. You can find out more about Rabbi Dossick and his work at godisanochi.com. That's godisanochi.com. Rabbi Dossick, welcome to Out of the Fog.
Thank you so very much. My late father would have loved that introduction, and my late mother wouldn't have believed it. So thank you very much.
That's wonderful. Well, you can believe it. I believe it, right? I should believe it.
Seriously. Thank you very much. Now, it's a pleasure to be on your program. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. It's wonderful to have you, and I've really enjoyed the book. And you say that we have never really known the true name of God. And there are so many names for God. So how can it be that we've never known the real one?
Well, that was my question. This one perfect God who loves us and holds us in tender compassion and gives us a set of sterling rules and moral conduct to live by. How does that one perfect God have so many names? Judaism has 20, 30, 40 different names for God. Christianity, Islam, Hinduism has 99 names for God, and some say 999 names. So how does that one perfect God have so many names? And also, how does that one perfect God who loves us so much behave often so badly in the Bible. Harsh, angry, militant, male domineering, authoritarian, who is often vengeful and revengeful and opens up the earth to swallow the faithless and decimates enemies. So I began to wonder all those things. And I came to the conclusion that none of the names that we have for God, none of the names that we have for God is God's real name of the whole, complete, total God. So each one of the names that we have for God is one aspect or attribute or manifestation or behavior of God. So if you picture a beach ball with all its many different colored panels, each one of the panels of the beach ball is one of the names of God, one of the aspects or attributes of God. My question was, what's the name of the whole divine beach ball? And could I go back into the Bible itself and reimagine and retranslate and find the name of the whole, complete, total God, the whole divine beach ball, hiding there in plain sight for all these years, just waiting for the right energetic moment in time to be revealed? And I found it.
And you found it. What is it? Say it.
The real name of God is Anochi. It's one of those words. I heard you pronounce it earlier, much like a like an Italian delicacy. Anochi. But it's Anochi. It's one of those words, like Hanukkah or Challah, or if you don't know the of Judaism, it's like Johann Sebastian Bach. Bach. So Anochi. Anochi is usually translated as I. But Hebrew has another word for I, which is the personal ego, the small self. Anochi is the fullness, the totality of I, the whole, complete God. It is used 359 times in the Bible, and when it is in the voice of God, it is when the whole totality, the full God, is vital to the teaching or the event. No one aspect or attribute or manifestation of God will do. The full totality of God is vital to the teaching or the event. And it is also used in the voice of human beings when a human being is asking, how do I come into the fullness of my God self? How do I touch the immanent God within and be as godlike as I can possibly be?
As a scholar, as a theologian, when you were searching through the Bible, when you were analyzing the text to find the name, how did you know that this is the right one?
Well, the name came to me in prayer and meditation. So I can't say that I thought it up all by myself. But so it was given to me in the ways that we in the world of spirit know that something is given. And then I had the great fortune in this technological age to be introduced to Rabbi Google. Rabbi Google and a biblical program called Accordance. I just put the name in, and all 359 times that it is used popped up on my computer. And I went and studied each one of those 359 times. Now, the good news is that I know enough Hebrew to be able to understand the teachings right there from the Bible and in the original. And so I saw that it fell into one or two categories, in the voice of human beings or in the voice of God. And when it was in the voice of each one of those, it did exactly what I explained a little earlier. And then I went looking in the ancient sources to sacred literature of the Jews earlier throughout history, in the Midrash, in the Talmud, in the Zohar, and with some of the Hasidic Rebbes. And I found that a number of them knew, and they left us hints in their writings, all of which I put into the footnote to the book, so that anybody who wants to look at this in a scholarly way can do so, because this is a combination of quality scholarship but also sacred spirit. So they knew, and they left us these hints, but it wasn't the right energetic moment in time for them to reveal the real name of God. And this is the right time. And so for whatever merit it is and for whatever reason I was chosen, I get to reveal the name of the discovery of the real name of God in the Bible.
Why do you feel that the time is now? Why is this the time?
What a wonderful question. Thank you. This discovery actually leads us to four what I believe are world-changing reformations. Number one, Anochi is a genderless word. Or better, it's genderful. It contains everything. Now, we're limited by language, both in English and Hebrew, because we have all these gender-centered nouns and verbs. But this takes away from us the necessity to call God a he, a she, or an it. So it tells us that God is the everything of the everything. The beach ball is the totality. So within the beach ball, within the totality of God, is male and female, good and evil, right and wrong, light and dark, justice and mercy. And so God says to us, you who are created in my image, imitate me by understanding that you are the everything of the everything. Jung understood it, Carl Jung, the psychologist, 100 years ago when he talked about the archetypes. But what we are seeing right now is the emergence so much of the divine feminine and then reflected in the world in the rise of, first of all, the feminist revolution back in the 60s and the 70s, and in the rise of the sacred woman, the rise of the understanding of divine feminine, divine masculine, and masculine and feminine within all of us. So we are the wholeness of the whole, just as God is the wholeness of the whole. That's the first thing we learn.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing we learn is that God is both the transcendent God of history, of creation and of history, and God is the intimate, eminent God of breath and soul. And so every community, every faith community, every religion has a communal covenant with the transcendent God. Each faith community, each religion, each tribal community comes to God in a particular way that is unique to its tribe, to its faith, to its religion, but is common in that all of us do that. Now we can know that in addition, each one of us can have a deep, personal, intimate, loving relationship with God. And just like the prophets of old, if we are open enough and we work on opening our own channels, then God can talk to us or envision to us or dream into us by day or by night, and we can have that deep relationship in a very, very personal way with God.
Mm-hmm.
The third thing we learn is that the harsh, angry, militant, male, domineering God is only one aspect of God. And there is no reason to get stuck on that theology where so many of our young people go off and get PhDs in nuclear physics and Russian literature, but they reject God because their theologies have not grown beyond 10 or 12 years old in their Hebrew school or communion classes. And so we can say, yes, that is a harsh aspect of God, but it's only one aspect of God. And look at all the other things that are there in this loving, compassionate, kind, decent God. And the fourth thing, which is probably most exciting at this moment in time and history, and this is probably why all those first three reasons that I gave the reformations is leading, they're all leading up to this one, and that is, in our world right now, the theme song seems to be, "My God's better than your God." And if you don't believe me, I will become a fundamentalist. And if you still don't believe me, I'll become an extremist.
Mm-hmm.
And if you still don't believe me, I'll become a militant.
Mm-hmm.
And if you still don't believe me, I'll become a terrorist. And I will make you believe what I believe through radical militarism and through terrorism. But the lesson here is that there is one God of us all. And just like in a family, siblings may call parents by different names. One child may say daddy, and somebody else may say dad, and somebody else might say papa, mama, mom, ma. But it's all the same parent. And here God is saying to us, I am the one God who is the parent of you all. And like any parent, I love all my children. I love all my children equally. I don't play any favorites. And I really don't care what you call me or how you address me or how you speak to me. I love you all. And again, you who are created in my image, I am telling you, just as I love you, I hope that you will love me, but I'm asking that you all love each other. We are all part of one. You are all part of one human family. So it is the time now to love each other rather than to fight with each other and to contend with each other. And that's why this discovery is given over at this time in history, because other times in history when we fought like this, and it's been often, we don't have the technological and scientific prowess that we have now. Now we have come to the point in human history where either we learn to get along in unity and in harmony and in love, or we face the possibility of destroying each other and perishing from this earth. So you see it right this very moment. This young leader in North Korea, instead of saying, my father died, I'm in charge now, and old enmities can end, I'm going to South Korea and embrace my brothers and sisters there, he's rattling the militant sword and saying, you will believe the way we believe, communism will take over you as well as my North, and if you don't believe me, I'll send missiles to force you to believe me. That's what's going on in the world right now. It can't go on. It can't go on because we now have not swords and shields and maybe some guns. We have the nuclear capability literally of destroying each other. So God says to us, stop. Stop it, my children. You must learn to get along with each other. You must learn to love each other because there is one God who is the parent of you all.
Rabbi, do you think we can all learn to love each other? Will we all learn to love each other? Human history is all about the ways we make ourselves separate. We splinter everything off into all these little groups, these labels. Is it possible for us to come together in this way?
Well, I believe so. Otherwise, I wouldn't be getting up early to be on your radio program. Here's a story. I don't know how old you are, so I don't know if you remember back to 1987.
Oh, yes, I do.
All right. So I spoke to some radio host the other day who said, oh, I was only 12 then. So she didn't quite remember this. But in 1987, a bunch of us, spiritual seekers, decided that we would pick one day where we would hold hands and sing songs, and everybody around the world would do this all at once. We later called it the harmonic convergence.
Ah.
Remember that?
Yeah, I certainly do.
So, people laughed at us. The mainstream and the rationalists laughed at us. You kids, well, I wasn't such a kid then, but you folks think that you're going to hold hands and sing songs and it's going to change the world? We didn't have an answer, except look at it this way. If in 1986 I had said to you, You know, I predict that in the next 20 years or so, here's what's going to happen in the world. The Soviet Union will fall and be devoid of communism. All the satellite countries surrounding the Soviet Union will become, to one extent or another, democratic. The Berlin Wall will fall. Blacks and whites will ride the buses together in Johannesburg, South Africa. Catholics and Protestants will stop shooting at each other and killing each other in Northern Ireland. And every once in a while, Israelis and Arabs will sit down at a peace table and talk about the possibility of peace. If I had said all those things to you in 1986, you would have called the white coats to drag me away to the closest loony bin. And yet it all happened. Did it happen because a bunch of young people held hands and sang songs? Probably not, but what the harmonic convergence did was raise oneness consciousness. Everybody around the earth did the same thing at the same time, raising oneness consciousness. Somebody once said to me, you know, I looked at your Jewish prayer book. You Jews have a formal prayer for peace, three services a day, every day of the year. You've been praying for peace for thousands of years, and yet there's no peace. How do you explain it? How do you explain the failure of your prayer? My response was, if everyone around the world prayed for peace at the exact same moment, for that moment at least, we'd have peace.
Right. So it's the power of... It's the power of not just what we say we're going to do, it's the power of doing it. And maybe it's about connecting to the God within to give us that power to step forward.
Exactly. You got it exactly right. So it is constant awareness of oneness consciousness. So, for example, in the second part of the book, is all about how to get in touch with the God within. And we do that through new meditations and new prayers and new spiritual skills and with 30 chants. Chants, C-H-A-N-T-S.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can't hear a chant from a book, and so on the website, www.godisanochi.com, that's A-N-O-C-H-I, we put all of those 30 chants, and as we used to say on the Old Town Site of Chicago, you can listen to them free for nothing. So we're giving away the listening to all the chants, or if you wish to own them and to have them available all the time, you can purchase a download or you can purchase a hard copy CD.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also a companion booklet to the chants called The Care and Feeding of Your God Self. And what we do with these chants is in a whole number of different ways or different ways to connect with God. We use either a prayer or a meditation or a chant. And so I'll give you just one example. There, one of the chants says, Shiviti Ahanochi Lehenegdi Tamid. Shiviti Ahanochi Lehenegdi Tamid. It's a verse from the Psalms, which says, I place God before me always. Now, what does it mean to place God before me always? The kids on the street would say, you put God in your face, mister. Well, what does it mean to put God in my face? It means that God is everywhere. God's in front of me and behind me and above me and below me and to the right and to the left. All I have to do is be aware of that. I have to be consciously aware. And so if I am aware of that, when I go into the bank and the teller is taking forever and I'm in a line that lasts around the bank, or if I go into a convenience store and the teenage clerk can't make change for a dollar bill without using a computer, or if somebody cuts me off in traffic, I could get very angry and frustrated and pound the steering wheel or yell at that clerk. But if I say God is before me, and so between me and what is frustrating is God, And I remember that that clerk or that teller is also a child of God, just as I am. And if I get angry or yell at that clerk, I am diminishing that person's godness.
Mm.
And when I diminish another's godness, I diminish my own godness. So it is, as the Eastern religions say, namaste, the God within me acknowledges the God within you. So if
wonderful.
We remember that every moment, then I can't be nasty to you.
Hmm.
And I can't cheat you in business because I would be diminishing God.
Hmm.
And I'd be diminishing your godness. I'd be diminishing my own godness.
We'll be right back after this.
The forest is a treasure and magical place.
Hello, Bambi.
Hello, little prince.
Hello. Hello, man.
But a wildfire can destroy its beauty for a lifetime. It's always wildfire season somewhere in America. Nearly 9 out of 10 wildfires nationwide are caused by the carelessness of humans and could be prevented. But together, we can make a difference.
Watch what I can do.
Help protect the home of our forest friends.
You can call me a flower if you want to.
To find out more, log on to SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
This message has been brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, the National Association of State Foresters, and the Ad Council.
Come on! You can do it!
We are talking about our world today. Oh, and someone's on the line.
Hi, I'm Jacqueline.
Welcome, Jacqueline. How old are you? You sound so young.
I'm 8.
Oh, wow. I assume you're a student, right?
Yes, from Jefferson Elementary. And I have a question.
Sure. And what's your question?
We all know the Earth has 7 continents that currently carry 193 countries. Those continents make up 29% of the Earth's surface, meaning that the vast majority of our planet, 71%, is comprised of water. Taking into consideration man automatically adapts to environmental conditions, why is it that I need to take swimming lessons?
Are you ready for kids who eat healthy? Good nutrition can lead to great things. To find out how a healthy lifestyle can help your child succeed, go to mypyramid.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the Ad Council and USDA.
Have you ever dreamed of being a karate master? Well, stop dreaming and start chopping with the Karate Glove.
Hi, my name's Molly, inventor of the Karate Glove, and I have just 1.5 words for you. Hi-ya!
The Karate Glove chops through anything. Just put it on and instantly chop through wood.
Hi-ya!
Concrete.
Hi-ya!
Brick walls.
Hi-ya!
Trees.
Hi-ya!
Small cars. It can even chop through these 8 guitars. It chops things.
If I can invent a karate glove, just imagine what you can do. Visit inventnow.org to get started on your invention. Anything's possible. Keep thinking.
Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
It's hi-ya time!
And now back to Out of the Fog with Karen Hager on Empower Radio. EmpowerRadio.com.
Welcome back to Out of the Fog. I'm Karen Hager, and my guest on today's show is Rabbi Wayne Dossick. His newest book is The Real Name of God, Embracing the Full Essence of the Divine. You can find more about Rabbi Dossick and his work at godisanohi.com. There, how did I do? And Anohi, which I'm now pronouncing correctly, is A-N-O-C-H-I, godisanohi.com. Rabbi Dossick, welcome back.
Thank you so much. I do want to say that I listened to your commercials during the break, and one was to prevent wildfires, Smokey T. Bear. A number of years ago, back in 1996, our house and everything in it was destroyed, totally destroyed by a California wildfire.
Oh.
And so my book, When Life Hurts, is my account of that and first some practical advice about how to deal with insurance companies and lawyers and how to begin to rebuild and contractors and house builders and how do husbands and wives stay married through the process. And then the second part is what does a person of faith have to say about where God was in all of this. Mm-hmm. So my book, When Life Hurts, the account of the wildfire that destroyed our house here in Southern California.
And that's a difficult question. You know, that break at the bottom of the hour hit me like a wall in the face. Ah, we were right at the break. But before we went into the break, you were talking about when we place God before us, behind us, inside us, all around us, it means that we interact with other people by acknowledging the God that is in them. And with that said, though, we also then want to see God acting in the world in ways that don't end up in war or death or pain or your house burning down or sadness. How do we kind of resolve those two things?
Well, God doesn't bring Southern California wildfires. The Southern California wildfires are part of the natural plan. And I chose to build a house on a canyon that had burned. Well, I didn't build that house, I bought it. But that canyon had burned once before, 20, 30 years ago, and everybody said it was going to burn again, but the builder chose to build a whole bunch of houses here, and I chose to buy one. You know, it may not be safe to live in San Francisco where there are earthquakes. It may be beautiful, but it might not be safe. Mm-hmm. It might be very productive to live on the banks of the Mississippi, but it might not be so wise. So on one hand, we have the choice to knowing that earthquakes come to San Francisco and wildfires come to Southern California and floods come to the Mississippi. And at the same time, we use our God-given talents to tame the monsters in our lives so that we now build skyscrapers in San Francisco on roller bearings that move during earthquakes. And we build, you know, I don't know the exact numbers, I'm just making these up, but the people in St. Louis, when they had the flood a few years ago, they were very smart. They had built a water dike, you know, one of those water walls, mm-hmm. 25 feet high. If the river had risen only 24 and a half feet, they would have been utter geniuses. Unfortunately, the river rose 26 feet, and it rose a foot over the barrier. Next time, they'll build 28 feet and hope it doesn't go higher than that. So we have the God-given possibility of being co-creative partners with God in making the world a better place.
And sometimes we do, and sometimes we don't.
That's correct. Hmm. You know, I you mentioned earlier I taught at a Catholic university for many, many years, and when I taught the Holocaust, I often ask on the final exam, where was God at Auschwitz? Hmm. And one of the last times I taught that class before I retired, I saw the students writing, responding to all the theology that we had talked about during the class. One young woman wrote two sentences. Where was God at Auschwitz? ? Where was man? ? She got an A+ on the exam.
Huh.
You know, President Roosevelt, he should rest in peace, had aerial photos of the train tracks going into Auschwitz in 1943. Why didn't he do anything?
Hmm.
He could have saved 2 years worth of lives that burned up in the ovens instead. There are political choices that are made.
Right.
The Pope was totally silent during the Holocaust. Where was his moral authority?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, and yet, here's the other side of the question. I grew up in the southeast side of Chicago. Bad, bad Leroy Brown and me, the same neighborhood. Remember that neighborhood?
I do indeed.
Yeah. So, it was a fascinating neighborhood. In 1945, 1948 when my parents moved in, it was a predominantly Polish Catholic steelworkers neighborhood. By 1960, it was a half-Jewish neighborhood, and by 1970, it was a totally black neighborhood. All middle class, all very lovely little homes, all people getting along together, but the demographic change in that neighborhood in just, what is it, 30 years, 35 years? So when I was little, the late 40s, early 50s, we all played together on the playground. And then I went to public school, and some of my friends went to the local parish parochial school, St. Mary Magdalene's. By the time I was 8 or 9 years old, I was being beaten up on a regular basis by my former friends who had learned from their priests and their nuns that I, Wayne Dossick, had personally killed their Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Fast forward 40 or so years to San Diego, California, where I am a rabbi and a faculty of a Catholic university, teaching the only courses in Jewish studies in the Department of Religion, working with the Monsignor for ministry and the mission to create for the first Friday of every fall or spring semester the all-faith service, where people of every faith, Judaism, Christianity, Islam, Buddhism, Hinduism, Native American tribes, came to the church on the campus to each pray in his or her own way. And I preached from the pulpit of the Immaculata, standing next to the statue of Jesus. And one of my closest, most intimate friends in the entire world is a Jesuit priest.
Mm.
Look at how far we've come in 50 years.
Yes.
It's utterly amazing. 200 years before, that priest and I would have been in a little shtetl in Eastern Europe. He might have told me that the Cossacks were coming, but more than likely the pogrom would have just, he would have turned his other face, mm-hmm. other side, when the pogroms came through.
Mm-hmm.
So look at how far we have come. A good deal of that is the responsibility of that twinkle-eyed Pope, John the 23rd. The Spirit moved the cardinals who elected him. It looks as if we have the possibility that this new Pope was chosen by the Holy Spirit, as opposed to the politics that have chosen previous popes. And he may just do some of the same kinds of things that Pope John the 23rd did. Now, I have to tell you that I was rooting for my priest, Father James J. O'Leary, fondly known as JJ, who used to be here in San Diego and is now back in Milwaukee, in his province in Milwaukee. He's a Jesuit. He said a Jesuit would never be elected. They elected a Jesuit. I told him I was running his campaign because I wanted Pope JJ the First. He said he had support in 3 parishes in Milwaukee and 1 parish in San Diego. That was about it. But he promised me that if he had been elected Pope, he would have given me a red yarmulke and brought me to the Vatican as one of his chief advisors. So that hasn't happened. But then we can even joke about those things. And by the way, he's one of the second most regular and popular guest on my own show, Spirit Talk Live. He comes on and we talk about everything that's going on in the church, everything that's going on in the Jewish world, everything that's going on in the whole world, and people just adore it when he comes on. Of course, he's a pretty liberal priest, and he wears a button that says Equal Rights, R-I-T-E-S, for women.
Doesn't
go over with some of his Jesuit buddies, but, you know, such is life. But that's what's happened. We can talk about that. And, you know, we can talk about the notion that in my grandparents' generation, people died of smallpox, and then somebody plucked out the discovery of the cure for smallpox, which God put out there at the moment of creation. And nobody who has access to the vaccine dies of smallpox. When we were kids, it was polio.
Right.
And somebody plucked out Dr. Salk, and then Dr. Sabin plucked out the cure for polio, and anybody with access to that vaccine doesn't die anymore. I can sit here today and tell you that somebody one day will pluck out the cure for cancer.
Mm-hmm.
and no one will die of cancer anymore. Now, it's much more complex. There are many more strains of cancer than there are of polio or smallpox. Nevertheless, the cure is out there in God's world, and we just have to bring ourselves higher and higher up the ladder of growth toward the world of the Messiah, toward perfection on earth. And we do that in many ways in oneness consciousness, because there is research going on in America, and there's research going on in China, and there's research going on in India, and there's research going on in Australia. There's research going on in Europe, all over the world, and certainly in Israel, all over the world. We've got to talk to each other. We've got to work with each other. And you know what scientists do? Scientists don't let politics get in the way, most of the time, unless it's a totalitarian government.
Mm-hmm.
So when we work together, we come closer and closer to the cures for the things that ail us as human beings. Sometimes it's medicine, sometimes it's technology, sometimes the only thing that we have to remember, the only thing that we have to remember in all of this is that we are children of God. And ultimately, all our power, all our knowledge, all our understanding, all our so-called inventions, they all come from God. Now, there's this great story about the scientists who come to God and say, God, we love you, we honor you, we respect you, but we've come to say goodbye to you. And then God says, really, why? And the scientist said, well, the only thing that you can do that we can't do is create ex nihilo. You can create human beings out of absolutely nothing. So we've learned to do that. So we don't need you anymore. So we've come to say goodbye. And God said, really? Please show me. And so a scientist reaches down and picks up a clump of earth and begins to shape it and mold it and form it. And God says, use your own dirt.
With you gotta consider where the materials come from, right?
Exactly.
With
okay.
This,
or where does an idea come from?
Right.
Where does an idea come? Ideas are the basis of everything. Where does that idea come from? It comes from God.
Right. Right. And that's everything. That's our imagination. It's our dreams. It's the way we reach out. One of the things in the book that really struck me was when you said that the Bible tells us more about how we relate to God, our quest for God, than it does about the nature of God.
Right.
Himself, itself. Right. And we get when things get challenging, when we have a question like, where was God at Auschwitz? I think a lot of us look at those facets of God that you're talking about. Well, there's vengeful God, there's loving God, there's the God who put everything in motion and walked away, there's the God who's intimately involved in every single thing that's going on. And so even as we're moving toward oneness, it also does, there are those extremist kind of pockets that you referred to earlier that want to really narrow it down, limit it, keep it what may feel like, I guess, safe. I know that these limits are here. How has your research, how has this book been received by people who hold very closely to that limited idea of God?
Well, any challenge to long-held, comfortable beliefs is a great challenge. And there, in one audience, I go around the country giving talks about this. If you'd like to invite me, give me a call or send me an email. Check the website for the info. In one audience, a man stood up and said, Rabbi, you are a visionary genius, and what you have discovered here will utterly and completely change the world for good. And another woman in that same audience stood up and said, you are a blasphemer.
Huh.
Okay, I understand. Any challenge to long-held comfortable beliefs is scary. And scary, when you fear is related to anger, and anger plays itself out in many, many different ways. So there are some people who are not so thrilled with this idea, but for most people, it's an aha moment. It answers all the paradoxes and all the seeming contradictions and all the mysteries that we've had about God and about the Bible for all these years. If you think about it and if you bring up any of the mysteries or the paradoxes or the contradictions, this discovery, this revelation, answers them all. And so for many, many people, it's an aha moment. I in the book, for Jews at least, I rewrote the blessings that we say every day, because the blessings address the King of the universe, and that's only obviously one aspect of God. So I wrote blessings that address instead the source of all worlds and the breath, the spirit of all living beings. That's a blessing I can say much more comfortably because it encompasses both the masculine and the feminine and speaks to the divine masculine and the divine feminine, which is reflected on this earth. So one of my friends and colleagues says to me, this idea is brilliant, the rewriting of the blessings is brilliant, and you know it will take at least 100 years for the new blessings to catch on. And that may be true, because you don't take away overnight something that people have been saying for thousands of years.
Right.
Or that we learned by rote as children. But as we contemplate it more and more, we'll see the efficacy of those blessings. And as we contemplate ourselves more and more, we can be in this deeper relationship with God. So, for example, and this is a little bit of a history lesson, I hope you don't mind.
No, I don't mind.
In biblical times, there was the possibility of direct prophecy. God could and would speak to any individual in words, in visions, in dreams, and that individual would get a direct message from God, and then the prophets of whom we know were told to give out that message to other people. At a certain point in Jewish history, beginning in about 200 before the Common Era, the biblical period began to give way to what we now call the rabbinic period, where the rabbis and sages came along and said, biblical prophecy is over. Continuing revelation will come only through us, the rabbis, the scholars, and the sages. You listen to us, we will articulate it, you do what we say, because we are the ones who now have this direct relationship with God. What they were doing, of course, was consolidating religious and political power. It's gone on that way for these almost to 2,000 and more years.